Thanks for downloading our podcast. You can find out more about Tech Tent from our webpage. Go to bbc.com/programs/techtent. Hello and welcome to Tech Tent, your weekly status update on the technology business. I'm Rory Catlin-Jones. Now, this week and next, we've got a slightly shorter programme than usual, and that means the tent is a little less crowded. But I am joined from the BBC Tech Desk by Dave Lee. Welcome, Dave.
Hello, Rory.
Now, first this week, if you're not immersed in the world of video games, you may not have heard of Gamergate. And if you are, you may be groaning and wishing you'd never heard of the term. Gamergate is a Twitter hashtag whose supporters say is about the ethics of games journalism. But for many women in the games industry, it's about a campaign of hate, harassment and sustained misogyny. We asked Dave Lee to step back and try to explain the affair.
Supporters of the movement say it's a rallying call against corrupt games journalism and reporters that are too close to the people and companies they cover. But others say that crusade is little more than a smokescreen for something that has existed for years. Deep, misogynistic views in an industry that until now has been dominated by the wants and needs of young men. For years, to be a gamer meant to be part of a tight-knit club, but the gaming community is having to grow up. Gamers are now young and old, male and female. It has moved from the niche to the mainstream. For the first time, the artistic and ethical content of the games is taking centre stage, and it's kicking off a bitter war.
Welcome to our multi-part video series exploring the roles and representations of women.
Back in March, feminist blogger and media commentator Anita Sarkeesian published the first in a series of videos examining the depiction of women in games. The videos proved highly controversial. Sarkeesian was quickly subjected to a hate campaign. She was sent pictures of herself, manipulated to look as if she was being raped by video games characters. Others made threats on Twitter. Her detractors said she was raising invalid and inaccurate points about women in games, forcing political correctness where it wasn't needed. Some expressed a worry games were in danger of being judged for their worthiness rather than their quality, pointing to one title in particular, a game called Depression Quest by independent developer Zoe Quinn. Dealing with issues around her own battle with depression, the game received positive reviews. But one act would change everything and set the tone for weeks to come. A blog post by Quinn's former boyfriend made allegations that Quinn had had a relationship with games journalist Nathan Grayson, a writer for website Kotaku. It was alleged that Grayson then went on to publish a good review of Quinn's game. Yet while reports of the relationship proved true, Grayson never actually wrote a review of Quinn's game. Regardless, Quinn soon became a central hate figure. Like Anita Sarkeesian, she too was subjected to death threats and rape threats against her and her family.
"Next time she shows up at a conference,"
said one comment,
"we give her a crippling injury that's never going to fully heal."
Fearing for her life, Quinn left her home to stay with friends. So too had Sarkeesian. Her third video in the series had been published and the threats had escalated. She tweeted,
"Some very scary threats have just been made against me and my family. I'm contacting the authorities now."
Later, she added,
"Staying with friends tonight. I'm not giving up, but this harassment of women in tech must stop."
By now, the controversy had a name, Gamergate, coined by actor Adam Baldwin, one of the movement's most vocal supporters. Accusations of misogyny, he said, were deflecting from the real issue of corruption in journalism, while stories published by Breitbart journalist Milo Yiannopoulos suggested regular collusion amongst games writers.
"The emails that prove video game journalism must be reformed."
It was a determined attempt to distance Gamergate from the vicious language used by many that were now associated with it, something that frustrated Gamergate backers like Harry Bradshaw.
"The original Gamergate was out to condemn personal threats, support women in gaming, but be against biased and corrupt game journalism. But there was a few people, probably the same crowd that were giving threats to Anita Sarkeesian, have jumped on that as an excuse to really just berate and get onto women in gaming and almost try and push them out."
The debate has become undeniably toxic and the sides have blurred. But more recently, another hashtag has emerged, Stop Gamergate 2014. It has quickly gained a wide breadth of support. Because whatever your view on Gamergate and the motivations that have driven it, the consequences are indisputable. Women have been driven from their homes and left fearing for their lives because they expressed opinions online. Countless more have now been left too afraid to say anything at all.
So that's Dave Lee's explanation. Now, one of the women attacked over recent weeks is Brianna Wu, a games developer who was forced to flee her home after receiving death threats on Twitter. She had been an outspoken critic of Gamergate, and she hasn't been intimidated into halting that criticism. When I spoke to her, I asked her what had made her take the threats seriously.
I, as a woman in technology, I receive harassment and, you know, rape threats and things like that, sadly, on a regular basis. The reason I took this one so seriously, there is information that the police have that I can't talk about publicly, but it does make me feel these threats are very genuine.
What does this say about the wider culture of gaming and of technology in general?
I think, sadly, right now, there is a war on women in technology. Certainly, especially my subset of technology, video games. You know, these same people that are harassing me and have sent me death threats, they've been going through the games industry and they've been taking out women in this industry one by one by harassing them to the point that they just leave. They've done it to my friend Samantha Allen. They did it to Maddie Bryce. They did it to Jen Frank. They've tried to do it to Lee Alexander. They've tried to do it to Anita Sarkeesian. And they've tried to do it to my friend Zoe. And what's so frustrating is the views I advocate are not, you know, something extreme, like let's get rid of all violent video games, or all we need to make sure there are no Call of Duties or something ridiculous like that. What I advocate professionally is companies looking at their hiring practices to make sure they're hiring women. You know, the industry looking at how they portray women in their games, you know, to make sure it's in a socially responsible way. You know, men kind of understanding some of the ways women get talked over in this field. You know, so the things I want are, I think, extremely reasonable. But even for speaking up on that, I get death threats and harassment to the point I can't even live at my home.
The people supporting this Gamergate hashtag say it's actually about a culture war in gaming. That they're only interested in gaming. They're not interested in feminist issues and so on. And they say there's a kind of corruption in gaming journalism.
Right. That is certainly their party line. But what is happening with the Gamergate movement is it's going after all these women that I've described. I don't know a single woman in technology right now that is not terrified of being next, you know, of being attacked by this mob, of being harassed out of her job.
And social media more generally, we used to be optimistic, didn't we, about the power of the web to bring us all together and to have free and open discussion. In general,
right.
It's turning into a disaster area, isn't it?
You know, one of the funniest things for me is I remember when I was a teenager in the 90s, and I would go to the internet to get away from the real world. And now I go to the real world to get away from the internet. So, yeah, I think sometimes we invent a technology and then we, you know, kind of discover the consequences of that technology. And I think that's exactly what's happening right now. I think we're finding out that, you know, these wonderful technologies like Twitter that connect us can also really fragment us.
Brianna Wu there. This is Tech Tent from the BBC World Service. I'm Rory Catlin-Jones. Shortly, we'll be hearing from a couple of women programmers pushing forward in the industry despite the obstacles. But first, a look at what else has been making the tech news this week. That's Google's new kids announced this week, a new Nexus 6 and Nexus 9 phone and tablet, and the latest version of its Android operating system named Lollipop. We were supposed to be hearing a little clip there from the announcement, but I think it was missing. Anyway, let's forge on. So we had that big announcement from Google with those Android devices, and just a day later, Apple had its latest event. As widely predicted, this involved unveiling a new thinner iPad and an iMac desktop computer with a 5K screen. Going for the ultra high definition screen there. Dave Lee, you watched those two events like I did. Was there anything really surprising in either of them?
Nothing particularly out of the ordinary. Google once again trying to release a set-top TV box that people want to use. They've tried this several times in the past, but the Nexus Player is their latest effort, which they say the secret sauce on this particular product is that it's easy to use, which they said about the last one.
Yeah,
as well.
I remember going to Google headquarters a couple of years ago to do a thing about the future of TV and sitting with a keyboard on my lap in front of the telly, which never worked. But this latest thing does look a bit better. It's got apps on it. This is what people have been calling for from Apple with its Apple TV, and it keeps failing to do.
Well, the Apple TV is, I guess, the next one last thing that may be coming along in the year or so. But no sign of that yet. But Google just keep on hammering at this TV idea. They really want to get this nailed.
Yeah, I was most interested in what Apple had to say about Apple Pay, but we're going to hear more about that next week. Two tech firms made headlines this week for an initiative which they say helps their female employees, but it proved controversial. Dave, remind us what that was about.
Indeed, this is a decision by Facebook to allow its female employees to freeze their eggs so they can hold off having children and have them later on in life, which is really divided opinion. On the one hand, women are saying this is great because it means that people can grow their careers without having to worry about not having children. But on the other hand, people are saying this is perhaps putting pressure to not have children for longer.
Yeah, Apple made a similar announcement also last week, similarly controversial. Now, how can technology help in stopping the spread of Ebola in West Africa? According to some telecoms experts, one of the very best solutions is not at all high tech. It's simple text messages. Terra is a system built to send out such messages during disasters. It's been used in Haiti following the earthquake there and in Sierra Leone during a cholera outbreak. Now the International Red Cross wants to roll it out across West Africa to help in the effort to control Ebola. Robin Burton, a telecoms consultant to the International Federation of the Red Cross, joins us on the line. Robin, take us through what this technology offers.
It offers a number of things. One of the most important is that it makes sending out SMSs less painful for the mobile phone operators. So it means that they don't have to divulge the phone numbers of the people that the messages are being sent to, for one thing. And it also means that the messages can be sent out during off-peak periods so that they don't interfere with normal commercial traffic. So that's one of the first considerations, to make it easier for mobile phone operators to accept this kind of thing. The other thing about it is that it's able to send messages on a regional basis. So that, for example, we can send messages to people in one area telling them that there's going to be a clinic, opening on the high street near where they live. And it can be very specific in that way. The other thing that's good about it is that you can send people a series of messages to their mobile phone, and those messages are retained on just about any mobile phone. The people receiving it don't have to have an iPhone or an Android machine. It can be any mobile phone within reason. And they can refer back to those.
And what's the track record so far? How has it helped in places like Haiti?
Okay, well, we have some feedback from Haiti. A survey was done of the population, and in round figures, around 25% of the population said that they'd received text messages from the Red Cross. And of those 25%, something like 95% approved of the idea. They thought it was a good thing that these messages were being sent out.
And briefly, what's your hope of what it could achieve with regards to Ebola?
Well, what I would hope is that it will help to empower the community so that basically people can help themselves. So they're provided with information to help themselves, and they're also provided with information that helps them use the aid services more effectively, so that you get more more bang for your buck, if you like, from the aid services which are rolled out. I would have to say, of course, that it needs to be included as part of a very broad media campaign, so it's used in conjunction with other things such as radio and TV and so on.
Robin Burton from the advising the IFRC, thank you very much. Just a quick mention, the BBC's launched something on the popular service WhatsApp giving information about Ebola in West Africa. You can find out more on the BBC Africa news site. Now, we were talking earlier about the treatment of women in the games industry. Let's get a slightly more optimistic take on women in tech. This week was Ada Lovelace Day, which celebrates the woman who was the first computer programmer. Born in 1815 in England, she became known for her work on Charles Babbage's early mechanical general-purpose computer, the analytical engine. I went along to London's Makers Academy Coding School for an Ada Lovelace Day event.
Thank you so much for coming along today. So today is Ada Lovelace Day for people that...
I'm Megan Folsom. I'm a product manager for Shuttle, which is an eBay company.
I'm Sarah Young, and I will be starting as a junior engineer at Deloitte Digital.
Megan, let's start with you. There have been some high-profile cases recently, particularly in the gaming industry, which has got a number of women developers, where they have been victimized, attacked, had terrible experiences on social media. Yeah. Is this thing getting better or worse?
I don't think you can say it's getting better or worse. I think these problems have always been there. And I think, quite frankly, that it's a positive sign that these problems are now coming to light, because there was a time when everybody was denying that there was a problem. So the fact that we know there's a problem means that we can now start to address it.
Sarah, there are lots of grounds for pessimism at the moment when you read the headlines, you hear about this whole debate in the gaming industry. When you read about that, when you hear about that, what does it make you feel?
Definitely a little bit scared to speak. I've probably cut back a bit on the tweets I'd make about feminism or gender in tech. You know, I try to be a bit more diplomatic.
Is there a sense in which social media, which we all were incredibly optimistic about as a sort of forum for debate, it's becoming used as a sort of weapon against women?
Yes and no. I think Megan's point is really good, that it is a lot more difficult to be a woman in social media because you do run certain risks that, you know, my male colleagues don't necessarily. But at the same time, it's also a very prominent way to highlight the type of misogyny that's out there, that, you know, women getting death threats is completely unacceptable. I've been told to go back to the kitchen and cook despite having 2 postgraduate degrees and an undergraduate degree. That didn't stop male colleagues saying, really, you don't belong here. But if you say that on Twitter or on Facebook, that gets attention.
Sarah Young, and before her, Megan Folsom there. Well, we're running out of time. That's about all we've got time for this week. Thanks to Dave Lee from the BBC Tech Desk. You can read more about all of our stories on bbc.com/technology. A whole bundle of news there on the site. Thanks for listening, and please join us again in the Tech Tet at the same time next week.